to sparking, or are they blue? The message clear, seduce the master winking. Dainty feet circles inscribe upon the frozen parquet. Arabesque compound times to clip a man up. Smile born of ungodly maker, cross me fast, the candle bright, fiery pleasure seeker. Sultry smile, come hither, gaze, black hair softly shining. Calls me up to hamlet bed, sweet cloud with golden light. She dances through the cloud-filled room, seaweed eyes are sparking. It's Ruby's dance, the message clear, Goldman does the talking. It's Ruby's dance.
Indeed it is. That's music from Ian Anderson, the leader and creative force behind Jethro Tull, who recently released a solo album, and we just heard the title track, Rupee's Dance. More in a moment on Rupee's Dance and Ian Anderson, who's our guest today on this week's edition of Talking Animals on 88.9 FM, KUCI, in Irvine, and streaming live on the internet at kuci.org. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Ordinarily, of course, you could reach us by phone here directly at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. But I am not here in all kinds of senses of that term. But I was sort of called away unexpectedly for very exciting news. It has to do with an adoption. In this case, not even an animal adoption. It's a human adoption. So we had to flew the coop. And this is now Sunday, the day before this is airing. And I'm on a plane otherwise when Talking Animals is airing. So I am not live. I am a Memrex. So... But anyways, it's all very cool, very exciting, but I did want to make sure that this edition of Talking Animals with Ian Anderson did still hit the airwaves. So on the other hand, there are still ways to be in touch with us, including emailing us at talkinganimals@aol.com. And, of course, you can also check out our terrific new website at talkinganimals.net. That's .net, folks. And before we move on, I want to thank Serena Sharp for another rousing rendition of the Serena Sharp Show. And for filling this hour for us last week when Talking Animals was also on the road, but for a much, much less exciting and dramatic reason than going to scoop up a baby boy, which is what my explanation is at this very moment. So anyways, thanks to Serena for all kinds of help. And meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources. We're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. It's been nearly 5 months since we launched Talking Animals, and we've been extremely fortunate during that time to have a long string of terrific guests, including in recent weeks Pamela Kerp from Orange County People for Animals, who filled us in all about the OCPA and Pamela's own path to animal advocacy. We also had a conversation with Sherry Hackett, wife of the late Buddy Hackett, both longtime animal lovers who worked tirelessly on behalf of animals in all kinds of ways and shared a vision for a new cage-free, no-kill sanctuary in the Los Angeles area to be built called Singita. Recently, we talked with Corrine Cutler of Bunny Love, a wonderful rabbit welfare organization that recently moved into brand new digs. And last show, 2 weeks ago, we spoke with Janie Thompson from Friends of Abaco for Animals, an organization in the Bahamas that tend to all kinds of animals, including feeding more than 100 cats a day by boat. That's just the nature of that beast. And of course, our string of great guests continue today, as I mentioned, when we speak with Ian Anderson, the singer-songwriter, flute player behind Jethro Tull, and who's also something of an animal expert and advocate, and we'll get his views on a wide array of animal-oriented topics and issues when we speak with Ian Anderson in just a few moments. Meanwhile, on Talking Animals, it's time for our weekly look at items of interest in animal news, and I want to remind you feel free to share any that you happen to come across, animal news, any announcement of an upcoming event, a benefit, something else that we should be sure to note on Talking Animals, observation, comments on the show itself. They'd all be most welcome. And again, ordinarily you could call those in as we speak, but either way, you can always email us at talkinganimals@aol.com. Turning now to interesting or important developments recently in animal news. These are typically local, regional, national, or international animal stories of note that seem important to spotlight. We also try to, of course, include announcements of upcoming events or activities that you may want to pencil in on your calendar. While we're on this topic, in animal news of a different sort, again, I'm extremely excited to remind you, perhaps redundantly, it'll even happen again, I'm sure, about the new Talking Animals website. We hope you'll check it out. It's www.talkinganimals.net. That's .net, folks, okay? .net. Got that? Okay. Anyways, on that site, you'll find archives of the shows and synopsis of every shows that we've done, so the guests, the music, the comedy, etc. Also assorted photographs and texts, including an essay currently on circus animals, all kinds of links, other audio pieces, and more. So take a look around when you can. Again, it's talkinganimals.net. Meanwhile, let's talk turkey, as it were. First of all, as I pretty much always do, I want to mention Tiger Rescue. That's the facility out in Colton, California, that has been in the news off and on for several months. Basically, it was a so-called sanctuary, and I'm just feverishly making air quotes around the sanctuary in this case, for tigers and other big cats that were retired from the film and TV industry, ostensibly, and other work. Anyways, long story and long legally complicated story, so I don't really want to get into it too much now. But the upshot is the proprietor had really let this facility kind of be extremely neglected, and more to the point, let the animals residing there be extremely neglected. So he's facing serious criminal charges. But meanwhile, many, if not most, of those animals still live there. In some cases, because there's still some legal and criminal things being resolved. But actually, more so now because it's been hard to find places, real, legitimate, proper sanctuaries that can take these animals. Some have been willing to do so, but don't yet have enclosures. So they're also trying to feverishly raise money and get things together to build enclosures. So anyways, at the moment, until that kind of moves further along, these animals largely are still there. And this really amazing man named Chuck Tracy, who otherwise runs a facility down in Ramona, California, called the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center, has stepped up in the biggest way possible, and he's running sort of the day-to-day operation of Tiger Rescue in Colton. But basically, everything's being done by an ongoing battalion of volunteers who drive in from San Diego and beyond in that direction, Ventura and beyond in that direction, and I'm sure all kinds of other points even beyond those, and in between certainly. So I would really urge you, if you could carve out a part of a day, a weekday is even better, but a weekend, of course, is great. And basically, you go out and you just help look after these animals. It's cleaning enclosures, it's helping water and you know, change out tanks, feeding them. And there's other animals, too, in addition to the big cats, but that's the bulk of it. And it's really cool, rewarding work, especially because these animals have come a long, long way in the few months since Chuck took over, and the volunteers have been really looking after these animals much more properly. So it's very cool, exciting work. Anyways, email us at talkinganimals@AOL.com if there's any way you can see your way out there to help out, and we will hook you up with the proper folks. Meanwhile, there's a website I want to call to your attention called the Animal Rescue Site, and basically what happens, at least as I understand it, is that if you go to the site, which is www.theanimalrescuesite.com, and click on Feed an Animal in Need, this releases funds, indeed, for animals at various rescue facilities. I mean, this is basically, you know, kind of worked out with corporate sponsors and advertisers based on the number of daily visits. So I haven't found a catch or a downside to this yet. I mean, if you happen to know one or find out one, by all means, please let us know instantly at talkinganimals@AOL.com. Otherwise, basically, if you go every day, the way I understand it, that gives more money to cool animal rescue sites and organizations doing cool work. So sounds pretty good so far. Meanwhile, related to the fire disasters, I also wanted to call your attention to one other thing. There's plenty of others, but we have sort of an abbreviated news segment today. There's a couple of folks who've sort of banded together formed Fire Disaster Relief Drive for the animals. So they're gathering donations for the thousands of animals who've been in and or are victimized by these recent fires in the Southern California area. So donations are needed: money, blankets, dog food, cat food, treats, toys, hay, horse and farm animal supplies, pillows, and anything else you can give. So initially, or now, though, I'm sure they'll have a website or something else kind of more formal. But in the meantime, there's two email addresses I'd like to give you. A person named Shannon Keith. And it's animallib.lawyer, all one word, at AOL.com. And the other person behind this is Stacy Howard. And you can email her at stacyhoward@AOL.com. So anyway, those are good things to do. And we urge you to, you know, help out any way you can. So I think really we're... that's going to be it for today's edition of the Talking Animals Animal News. And we want to keep moving because we have kind of a cool extended interview with Ian Anderson coming up. So, but in the meantime, I say it's time to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. So, with, as always, of course, a piece of animal-oriented stand-up. This is Brian Regan with a piece called Whales on KUCI.
Ladies and gentlemen, Brian Regan.
Now, you might think that's quite an intro, and in fact it is. And now here's the actual piece that we intended to play there. How's that sound? All right, cool.
I saw this documentary recently on whales. This guy has dedicated his life to telling you what the whales are saying. Wow. I don't know how you'd argue with him when he turns in his report. And he just throws it down there. Well, here's what the whales are saying. Okay, thanks, Charlie. He's looking back. Here's what the whales are saying. Yeah, Charlie figured it out. They show how he does it. He's out on a ship. He's got a pencil. And he deciphers the whale noises as he hears them. You know, he'll hear like... You know, he's like, oh, okay. Oh, he's lonely. No, you're lonely. I'd like to do that for like 2 weeks and then turn around and find out that the door's squeaking behind you.
All right, that's... You're listening to Talking Animals on KUCI 88.9 FM. I'm Duncan Strauss, and that was Brian Regan with a piece called Whales, taken from his album simply entitled Live. The Comedy Corner is a weekly feature of Talking Animals, maybe even a signature feature of Talking Animals, if that's not overreaching. And if you have a suggestion of an animal-oriented piece of stand-up you think we should feature on the Comedy Corner, we'd really, really welcome that input. Some of these things are hard to find or hard to find that are broadcast appropriate, if you know what I mean. So anyways, open all suggestions along those lines. So you can email us those, talkinganimals@AOL.com. And, of course, as you know, we stream live on the Internet, www.kci.org. And it's a pretty neat website with a schedule of all the programming. I'm sure some of you are listening via that website as we speak. But they have a really cool schedule that sort of tracks as the day unfolds who's on and who's coming up, and an overall schedule for the whole week if you want to look at it that way. CD reviews, a list of upcoming bands playing live on the station, special guests that are being interviewed on the talk shows, etc. So that's KUCI.org. And again, while we're talking about nifty websites, I'd guess be remiss, if not redundant, if I didn't mention our new site, TalkingAnimals.net, www.TalkingAnimals.net. I need to remind you, by the way, that the opinions and views expressed in Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or the University of California Board of Regents. Earlier in the show, I mentioned that this week's guest is Ian Anderson, the songwriter and flute-wielding frontman of veteran rock band Jethro Tull. The Jethro Tull catalog is laced with animal songs and references. Anderson really recently released a solo album, Rupee's Dance, that itself features a handful of animal songs. Also recently, he's ratcheted up his involvement with animal organizations and causes. Heck, he was profiled in a recent issue of Cat Fancy. And he has more than a little expertise about a variety of animals and animal causes, as you'll hear in this interview recorded several days ago. It's Ian Anderson on Talking Animals here on KUCI.
Good.
All right, joining us today on Talking Animals is Ian Anderson, the man, the voice, the flute, the everything behind Jethro Tull, and recently released a new solo album, Rupee's Dance, which pretty heavily animal-oriented, and starting with the title track. And touring behind that album and playing a very cool, unusual format, rubbing elbows with Ian Anderson, which perhaps we can touch on in a few minutes. But there's actually so many things I want to discuss, even with the inherent focus of this being a radio show devoted to animals. There's still quite a sprawling bit of territory to cover, but perhaps we should just jump right in with Rupee's Dance. And I guess first, on a general note, for those who followed Jethro Tull for any part of its 35, 36-year career, and might think the occasional Ian Anderson solo album is somewhat redundant, what would you want them to know, Ian?
Well, writing music for a solo album is altogether a more personal experience, one where you don't have to worry about writing for the other guys in the band. You write for the sake of the songs alone and for your own expression, and don't have to worry about making the drummer happy by including the kind of musical arrangements that will feature traditional rock instruments. So, you know, I do make a very distinct division in my own mind between doing solo album stuff and Tull album stuff. So, you know, it is very different. But it's different also because the subject matter is likely to be more intimate, more personal, and more more varied in terms of looking at different kinds of subject material that, you know, sometimes it's easier to express as an individual rather than through the corporate entity of a musical group.
Sure. And I guess actually with that in mind, that might lead us right into to animals. And if I'm not mistaken, the title track, in fact, is about one of the kittens in a litter you rescued not quite a year ago. Is that right?
Well, that's right, yes. Yeah, just before Christmas, we had... we'd actually just lost one of our older cats who died of liver cancer, and a couple of weeks after that, we heard about a litter of abandoned kittens of about 4 weeks of age, and picked those up, brought them through to you know, being weaned and having their first course of injections and being old enough and humanized enough, because they were from a feral mother, who's since been captured, actually, and neutered.
Oh, really? Wow.
At the time, you know, these were feral kittens, so they took a little work to get them to the point where they were safe to put out to new homes. And the one little kitten who was particularly sick and not well at all, we couldn't really let her go, and so we kept her. And her name is Rupi, which is a Hindu name for meaning beauty.
Oh,
but
wow.
She was a cute little sexy little black thing. And once she got her toilet habits under control, she was, and has remained a good and loyal family friend.
So she actually stayed within the Anderson household then?
That's right. Yes, I mean, we have three other cats and a couple of dogs. So. She's part of the family.
And so that's probably why, I guess, she gets out of that litter, why she gets the song, much less the title track, as it were.
It was just a song. I mean, I think in 36 years, I've written four cat songs. You know, four songs that were, you know, about or related to the feline experience. And
sure.
That's just happens that two of them are on one album. But,
right, and in fact, another song on Rupi's Dance is Old Black Cat, and is that about the song you just referred to? I mean, about the cat that you just referred to?
Yeah, I mean, ostensibly it may appear to be about an old, dead black cat, but it's more really about how we as people tend sometimes to undervalue the things around us that we take for granted, that we see them every day, they're just always there. And we don't really recognize until they're gone just how valuable they are as part of our experience. And,
sure.
And they could be animals, they could be family people, they could be friends, they could be things.
Sure.
You know, I really miss my old laptop computer that died a couple of years ago. And sometimes just even inanimate objects or functional things, you know, you realize...
You just get in a routine and you don't acknowledge...
You kind of realize just they were really kind of good things when you had them, and
sure.
Then suddenly they're not there anymore. And quite often, of course, in the world of things, technology tends not merely to replace but to supersede. And you know, I guess we all now have had the experience of certain mechanical or electronic things that we thought, well, that was really damn good, and we can't replace it because they don't make that model anymore. They make something with a lot more buttons to push, a lot more, you know, things to fiddle with, and we kind of liked it when it was, you know, a little simpler, a little bit more direct, and they don't make that anymore. So I think we're already seeing that in technology, that you know, newer is not necessarily better.
Right, and also I think maybe to sort of balance that out, that's one of the many virtues, I guess, of animals. In fact, I want to, you know, get into more of the stuff on Rupi's Dance, as well as your support of Best Friends Animal Society, and your emergence as an expert in adopting and raising kittens, something of a cat whisperer, if I may. But first, anyone who's really followed your songwriting for any length of time knows that. The Jethro Tull catalog has really long been laced with animal songs and references, and so I just want to maybe go back a ways. I mean, have you sort of long been an animal lover? Did you grow up with animals? And
as far as I can remember, yeah, we've always had household pets, cats, dogs. I think I had a pet mouse once. I think briefly we might have had a budgerigar somewhere along the line, but... You know, I think I'm a greater appreciator of animals in the wild, really, than under domestic control. I'm afraid that I'm kind of a supporter of the animals when they get their own back. So, you know, the recent episode with Siegfried and Roy, I'm afraid I'm kind of a guy who puts his hand up and say, hey, here's one for the tigers.
Yeah.
And, you know, last week I was in a zoo in Louisville, actually quite a nice zoo, and I was backstage with the keepers, and, you know, and I stood 18 inches away from a 400-pound Amur tiger who was in a very bad mood.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that there was some very heavy-duty steel mesh between me and the animal did not stop me from realizing, when I felt its hot and angry breath on my face, this is an animal that's definitely... you know, going to take my head off given half a chance. And, you know, people who use animals in terms of, I really do believe, debasing them for entertainment and mm-hmm. their own financial enrichment.
Yeah.
I really find that real. I mean, I'm really pretty disgusted with that. And
sure.
I've not seen Siegfried and Roy's show, and it may seem a little, you know, a little cavalier to mention this when someone is still, I guess, just only off the critical list. But, you know, frankly, I can't help but think that, you know, poor old Roy had it coming, you know, that mm-hmm. You spend your lifetime, and bearing in mind this is a guy who began his career by stealing a cheetah from a zoo in Germany, stealing a wild animal.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is not something to be proud of. This is a bit of a shit
hey,
guy, you know,
yeah.
who actually makes his living out of appropriating animals and subjecting them to the dominance, as he saw it, with a view to making money. I mean, I don't see anything at all nice about that. And all the spurious claims about conservation that these guys are involved is I think, substantially bullshit.
Hey, well, that's
and, there is no such thing in terms of a species or a subspecies of as white tiger. These are selectively inbred
Bred.
Animals,
yeah, for sure.
specifically designed for their visual value as entertainment. And so, quite frankly, I mean, I do hope this has put an end to Siegfried and Roy's disgraceful treatment of animals. And there'll be some people out there who think I'm a real spoilsport and an unpleasant character, but I think also there'll be a lot of people who'll say, hey, you know,
well said. Yeah.
We kind of agree with that. And, you know, place for wild animals is in a wild habitat. And we should be devoting our efforts to preserving habitat of wild creatures and protection of wild creatures in their natural environment. That's the first option.
Sure.
The last option is the Noah's Ark principle, where you have to, just for survival of the species, you have to talk about captive breeding. And that's only applicable in a very, very small percent of cases.
Right.
And remember, there are more captively held lions and tigers in the USA than, or certainly with tigers, than you will find in the wild currently on planet Earth.
Oh, absolutely.
Because these animals are held as exotic pets.
Sure.
And we're not even talking about accredited zoos here. We're just talking about uncredited and discredited individuals who keep them as exotic pets.
Well, Ian,
I mean, there's something rather sad about that people delude themselves into believing they're involved in conservation when all they're doing is perpetuating the illegal trade in exotic pets. And unfortunately, that's what happens.
Yeah, well, and I'm sure you no doubt read about the man in New York, who had the tiger in his apartment?
Yeah, well, a classic case of somebody, yeah. you know, daring to suggest that he was involved and he was setting up an animal refuge. I mean, the buffoon, I mean, stupid bugger yeah. that he was,
yeah.
you know, was just playing at it. I mean, this delusion of the same sort as you get on a much grander scale with the Siegfried and Roy people, who probably yeah. really believe that they're involved in some wonderful, miraculous, you know, act to help conserve a species. Well,
yeah.
you do get deluded, especially when people are, you know, paying you millions of dollars a year for doing it. It's very easy to become deluded. But, you know, place for wild animals is in the wild. And I would go beyond that to say that, you know, there are some zoos, not all zoos by any means, but some zoos who do a pretty good job of making available wild animals for public viewing
mm-hmm.
and education, and that's okay. That's
yeah.
okay, provided it's carefully done. And,
mm-hmm.
and many of the zoos I go to, it is carefully done, and you feel that the animals are, you know, still preserved a lot of their instinct and are still, you know, still sort of fairly intact. But you can't get away from the fact that, you know, lions, tigers, even small cats, let alone most of the other species, you know, these are animals that range over considerable territorial extent in the wild, and you put them into a 30-foot cage, you know, or even a 60-foot pen. It's equivalent to, you know, you or I being locked up in penitentiary. So
oh yeah, well
if you're going to do that stuff, there's got to be an overall balance of good about it, and the overall balance is only when there is a true conservation message, there's a true educational message being put across. When it debases itself to mere entertainment, then there is something extremely unhealthy about it. And frankly, the world is a better place without Siegfried and Roy.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, things you've said, Ian, triggered any number of thoughts, one of which is that I can only imagine, based on what you've said, how you feel about the world of circuses that use animals. And, you know.
No, I feel exactly the same way. I mean, there are certain animals that are, you know, that are fairly comfortable in captive circumstances, but, you know, lions and tigers, you know, the big cats are not amongst those. The small cats certainly aren't, and the small cats, of course, are very popular for the fur trade and indeed for the exotic food trade in certain parts of the world. And you know, these things I'm appalled by.
Yeah.
However, we have to accept that there are cultures and peoples in far off places who don't understand why we think it's not very nice to trap the Asian leopard cat, for example, put it in a tiny small cage and sell it for food in a Chinese market. They don't understand why. They wouldn't understand why I think that is obscenely awful.
Sure.
But because they would say, well, hang on, you do the same thing with chickens. You know, you do the same thing with beef cattle. You know, raised on concrete, fed hormonally enriched diets. I mean, you know, that also is pretty horrible. And yet, do we ever think about that when we go into Ruth's Chris Steakhouse and consume another, you know, pound of, you know, beef fillet? Do we ever think about how that animal was reared? Well, you know, of course, you know,
it's just the cultural distinction, really.
We have to be prepared for a little criticism coming back at us and saying,
absolutely.
Well, hang on, we're not whiter than white either, and just because we hold certain animals in esteem as being not fair game for either being held captive or for eating.
Yeah,
that doesn't hold up in terms of the cultural diversity, you know, across the planet. So
sure.
We have to be a little careful about formulating those opinions.
Absolutely.
However, when it comes to you know captive dancing bears or defanged cobras, you know, in an Indian marketplace, or the Siegfried and Roy experience, you know, that's when I think it becomes, for me at least, very easy to say which is right and which is
wrong.
Let's
hold it here. Yeah. Well, and two circuses. I mean, for, you know, with as you were talking about before, about animals that are confined, who are used to, you know, in the wild, traveling great distances. I mean, elephants in circuses is a particular pet peeve of mine. And, you know, Ringling Brothers, of course, has this great literature and this great stuff on their website about their elephant conservation program. And
well, I mean, of course, people do that because that's just like paying hostage money. I mean, that's something they do after the fact in order to try and gain credibility.
Of course.
That's not the reason that they're in the circus business.
Oh, absolutely.
To be in conservation. This is to try and defend themselves from people like you or me who are quite happy to poke their eyes out.
Absolutely. Yeah, it couldn't be more transparent. Fact, yeah.
Mm.
But so basically then it sounds like you know, you're you know, obviously on tour and traveling to all kinds of, you know, far-flung locales. So it sounds like on many occasions when there's a mild media day or no-show day, you do try to visit zoos around the world, or just certain ones that you know have a particularly good reputation, or?
Sure. Well, I've been to some good zoos and some extraordinarily bad zoos, and it's probably not the time to give you my opinions as to which are which. But,
right.
But you know, suffice it to say that most of the people listening to this are not likely to go to any of them, so it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. But there are good zoos and bad zoos, and there are also people that I do try to help in terms of real scientific conservation work from time to time, because I think primarily the most important starting point is habitat study and the analysis of numbers of habitat of prey species. You know, we have to learn to understand the way the world works at different levels of the food chain regarding different animal species. We've got to understand more about it before we know how we can deal with things. However, when it comes to the final crunch time, you know, the Noah's Ark time, you know, when you've actually got to, you know, take what may be the last few surviving animals of a particular species on the planet and say, this is it, it's now or never, we actually have to hold these captive with a view to captive breeding, then, you know, I guess I have to go along with that, you know, but that's the Well, that's the second last option. The very last option is the C word, cloning.
Mm.
And I guess, you know, again, I think if cloning has anything really meaningful to offer mankind, it has less to do with the opportunity of, you know, cloning your dear departed offspring or sibling or mate.
Mm-hmm.
It is probably most validated in regard to the truly last-ditch effort to save save a dying species of animal,
yeah.
Because you know, or I suppose cloning may be applicable to other species that are non-mammalian, but we can obviously think of examples like the Andean mountain cat, which has never been trapped live, has only ever been photographed now, I think, a total of 3 times, and that's been in the last 2 years. And there would seem to be so few of those animals around that we probably are getting to the point where it is down to trying to trap and capture 6, 8, 10 animals from different areas and actually start a captive breeding program. And in order to duplicate that in different parts of the world with a view to sustain the population, then we may have to look at cloning as a means of further validating a limited captive breeding program. But of course, that's all in keeping with meticulously kept stud books, and so you know exactly
who is the
progeny of what particular parents.
And, mm-hmm.
You know, all these things have to be really scientifically done. It's not something that amateurs can play with. And although there are some non-professional, very keen amateur conservation efforts going on, and some sanctuaries and wildlife havens for animals, and some of these folks do a very good job, but there's few of them, I think, would have the innate
scientific kind of grounding
to be able to do this when we're talking about survival of a species.
Sure.
Forever, you know. I mean, it really has to be done by people who are scientifically trained and who are truly, truly accountable for what is the fate long term of a particular species.
And sure.
So I tend to direct my efforts more towards the scientific community and the professional zookeeping fraternity, who I think, you know, do have the credentials and the expertise to make these things work.
And speaking of the Andean mountain cat, I know that's been an interest of yours, and it seems like that and some other threatened species are sort of spotlighted on the Jethro Tull website, along with suggested wildcat links to wildcat websites. And I'm just wondering, to what extent has your concern and advocacy, if not activism even, ratcheted up in the last few years regarding animals, and to what do you attribute that?
Well, it's no sudden change. I mean, it's just something I've, over many, many years, just had an increasing interest in rather than a waning interest.
Mm-hmm.
And as I learn more about it, and particularly in the internet years, which we now enjoy,
sure.
We have the opportunity to communicate with people of like mind and like interest. So the 100 or so people really actively involved in small wildcat conservation, you know, they're people who all know each other. You know,
mm-hmm.
And this is possible now. 20 years ago, it wasn't. People
sure.
were working in isolation and didn't have the opportunity to pull resources and knowledge
compare
and
notes,
facts and
yeah.
figures. These days, there is a real opportunity to make truly worldwide conservation a family effort. You know, when you're talking about a relatively small number of people who have expertise in the field, but they can now communicate, talk to each other, pull their resources, you know, gather funding under one umbrella, and so I think we have a chance now to make things work that was impossible, you know, 20 years ago.
Sure, sure. And with that in mind, when and how did you first kind of become involved with the Best Friends Animal Society?
Because it's something introduced to me by our New York publicist, who you know, is I think particularly keen on cats herself.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so
yeah.
She sometimes hooks me up with these sort of folks who are involved in specific areas of activity. And, you know, I have to confess, I don't know a great deal about these people. I've got a book and some leaflets sitting on my desk, which I haven't got around to reading yet, but I will before I arrive, I think, in New York, where they'll be involved with us during our concert there in a couple of weeks' time.
Sure. And it certainly, yeah, I mean, you certainly set up a nice auction through eBay for tickets to that show in New York and a chance to meet with you and an autographed flute, and all the proceeds do go to Best Friends Animal Society. So, but I guess back to sort of the sort of selective pro-zoo, you know, feeling that you've kind of mentioned. I guess I'd be interested just back to some of the stuff on Rupee's Dance. Pigeon Flying Over Berlin Zoo seems like kind of an interesting song, sort of, I guess, written from the point of view of the pigeon and raising questions about sort of who has it better on which side of the wall.
Well, that's right. I mean, when I'm in Berlin, I quite often go into the zoo because it's one of those, I mean, real city-centre zoos, but mm-hmm. it's actually, you know, quite a good zoo.
Yeah.
And also it actually does have quite a number of small wildcat species, unlike the majority of zoos. So when I was last in Berlin Zoo, I was wandering around there and couldn't help notice a pigeon circling overhead and thinking, you know, what are the definitions really of freedom that we have here? You know, where on the face of it, the pigeon is free to fly wherever it wants, and down below are a number of animals segregated and compartmentalized in their cages and enclosures and, you know, seemingly imprisoned. But on the other hand, when you look at it the other way, these animals are fed and watered, cared for, get regular veterinary inspections, you know, get exercise, get, you know, they're in a five-star hotel compared to the poor old pigeon who's got to fly around the rest of the city of Berlin, you know, forage for the odd scraps,
sure.
avoid the vermin controller's air gun.
Yeah.
You know, it questions the whole idea of freedom, and it indeed questions the idea of freedom in people, you know, who
mm-hmm.
live in the context of the big city. You know, sometimes, you know, we feel imprisoned by the city environment, but you know, in a way, we're with family, we're with friends, we're with a community sense that we understand. And sometimes out there in the wilderness, out there in the countryside, you know, we don't have that freedom to, you know, run down to the pharmacy to pick up some aspirin or to go to the supermarket and, you know, pick up some groceries.
Sure.
You know, so freedom is a very, you know, it's a wonderful word to use, like democracy, but
mm-hmm.
but it means different things to different people.
Oh, yeah.
And I quite like the idea that, you know, you can, especially in a city like Berlin with its history of the true division of the wall between East and West,
mm-hmm.
and in a way, almost unlike anything else, you know, in history, it really truly epitomizes for people of our time, you know, the idea of the division between the freedom of the West and the imprisoned yoke of communism on the East. But, you know, having traveled to countries in the ex-Eastern part of Europe that are now democratic and post-USSR, you know, sometimes I have to wonder, you know, and indeed a lot of the inhabitants of those countries wonder if perhaps in some ways they weren't better off under the old regime.
Yeah, yeah.
That the Western democratic and economic revolution failed to materialize for them in a way that brought them the prosperity that they'd been told would be forthcoming. And now here we are, you know, 13, 14 years down the line, and a lot of these folks are saying, well, hang on a minute, we're worse off now than we
yeah.
were before. And
what happened
here? What's all this promise of you know, BMWs parked in our driveway?
Didn't quite materialize that way.
Well,
yeah,
not yet, and it's probably still, you know, 10 to 20 years away in most parts of in parts of Eastern Germany, let alone other parts of Eastern Europe.
Sure.
Which is why I'm looking forward to doing my next Eastern European tour next summer, and looking forward to visiting the Czech Republic, the Slovak Republic, and Hungary, and East Germany, and Poland again, because, you know, I have a lot of affinity for those people who've, you know, for three or four generations have gone through the kinds of hell that perhaps American people have only just begun to imagine in the post 9/11 era.
Sure.
You know, for a lot of people in parts of Europe, you know, they can't imagine life when bombs didn't go off,
right,
and the maiming and the killing and the pointless inhumanity of man to man, you know, they can't remember a time when that wasn't part of their lives and their
the day-to-day,
you know,
existence
generations before them.
It's sure
just it's for them hard to imagine the relative freedoms and economic comforts that most of us in the West have taken for granted.
And with that in mind, Ian, and just sound like you're just looking ahead to more touring, I mean, I guess I'm curious, you know, just because it sounds like you still love, for these kind of reasons, if not others, touring and just seeing different parts of the world and seeing what the people, what their experiences are. But, right now you're at home on a break from some touring. But with all the touring with Jethro Tull and now behind your solo project, I mean, I assume there's some number of animals living with you at any given time. And you know, do you find you miss those animals, or do you schedule breaks in such a way so there's not too long of a time where you're away from home, family, and animals?
Well, because I live here in a place where both my domestic and my work environment, you know, there are staff around here. So when I or my wife are away, then, we have other members of staff who I think have bonded with our animals,
sure.
Domestic animals sufficiently that, it makes life reasonably bearable for them, you know.
Yeah.
And cats are pretty cool, you know. I mean, you can disappear from cats for weeks at a time, come back, and after a couple of minutes of frowning and
giving you the silent
turning their back on you,
yeah.
You know, they're just kind of back straight away to just, you know, you're part of the family, and they forget that.
All
you're
is forgiven.
Dogs are a little more sensitive. And
so do you have cats and dogs, or what are the current animals living in the Anderson house?
Well, we have a few cats, and mm-hmm. we have a couple of Belgian shepherd dogs, a Tervuren and a Groenendaal, two breeds of Belgian shepherds who are not really like the German Shepherd, a much finer boned, higher back end, great family dogs, good with children, family rather than one master kind of dogs, so they're much better family pets than German Shepherds. If anybody likes a medium to large sized dog that's really good with children, family, and no problem with cats, I mean, you know, just you can have cats and Belgian Shepherds in the same household, no problem at all.
Oh, that's great.
Then if you find a reliable breeder of either the Tervuren or the Groenendaal breeds of Belgian Shepherd, I would heartily recommend them. I mean, we've had, since I've been married 27 years, we've had three generations of Belgian Shepherds, and they really are, you know, great, great animals. And I think when our current two pass on, as they probably will in the next mm-hmm. 2 or 3 years, because they're getting on a bit, then I'm pretty sure that we'll have yet another round of Belgian yeah. Shepherds in the family, because they are, you know, just really, really good animals and really good pals. I mean,
yeah.
they're really family kind of animals, you know.
Yeah.
They're really good with people that they accept as part of the family. I mean, they're, these guys are here as guard dogs. They're there to make a lot of noise and scare off intruders, but you know, with family, they're totally loyal and absolutely trustworthy with children and other pets.
Yeah, it sounds like if they get along that well with the cats there as well, that's that they've got all the bases covered. So
yeah, well, you can't do that with husky breeds. I mean,
yeah.
they eat cats,
right?
They
don't understand,
chase them.
Yeah,
and you know, I mean, most dogs are kind of okay with cats. Most bigger dogs are okay with cats. Smaller dogs tend to be a little yappy and a little jealous and.
Sure.
But you know, the bigger dogs are usually okay, and certainly my hearty recommendation for the Belgian breeds goes out. I don't know if you have many breeders of Belgians in America. I don't think they're that popular,
but
not that popular over here either. But
sounds like they should
used
be
by
though.
Police and rescue services in the same way as German Shepherds are, but they're quite different to the German Shepherd.
And
much nicer animals.
All right. Well, see, that's good. Maybe you're helping spread the word and on the Belgian Shepherds. But
go to some suitable search engine and look for Belgian Shepherd breeders. I'm sure you'll find something in North America, and hopefully they're as reliable and as well bred as the animals we find over here in Europe.
And on the feline side of things, as you developed this sort of expertise on cats and kittens, when did you start kind of sharing that with others locally? And then, you know, it seems like in the last, 2-3 years or so, ended up on the Tull website
Well, it's only because people ask me questions about it. I mean, I'm not an expert, and I'm not qualified in a veterinarian sense. I'm just someone who reads a lot of books and talks to a lot of people about it. So sometimes if I can pass on something, then I'm happy to do it. But my advice always is to visit your local professional vet if you have doubts about your animal's health. And if you're looking for acquiring an animal as a pet, then buy a book, go on the internet, learn about the breed, learn about what it is you really want, and try and consider how that's going to fit into your household before you take on the commitment of a pet. And, I guess there are an awful lot of places where you can go to pick up an unwanted animal that's been, a stray or lost animal that you can
adopt,
take on.
Yeah.
And don't be afraid of older animals either. I mean, everybody wants to have a kitten or a little puppy, and of course you can find those in the dog pound or whatever. But very often older animals are great to bring into the household because they already have learned, hopefully, some good experiences of people, and they're already used to a lot of factors that makes them sometimes very easy to integrate. There's nothing, no harm in, picking up a cat that's 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years old. It may just turn out to be a ready-made instant pet. And quite often, if you don't have the time to put into rearing and making part of the family a young puppy or a young kitten, then taking on an older animal may be an advantage to you because it comes with a certain maturity and a certain set of experiences which may make it integrate into your family a lot more easily than the puppy or kitten, especially if you don't have the time to spend with it.
Not to mention a certain gratitude. I mean, it just seems like when you adopt, whether it's older or not as much, a cat or a dog, there's just on some level this sort of extra connection that where they really appreciate.
Yeah, a bit like the girls, really. The older they get, the more grateful they become if you buy them dinner and send them some flowers.
There you go.
Listen, I'm looking at my watch here. I really have to go because I've got other stuff to do.
Absolutely,
tonight.
Absolutely, yeah.
Good to talk to you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's Ian Anderson, the new album's Rupees Dance, the tour Rubbing Elbows with Ian Anderson, which would have been fun to hear more about, but that resumes October 30th in St. Paul, Minnesota, and in the U.S. at least, runs through November 23rd in Pensacola, Florida. So any other information, it's www.j-tull.com.
Well, just go to jethrotull.com. That's the easy one.
Oh, okay.
Jethrotull. .com.
Oh, okay, maybe it changed. Initially, it seemed like you had to...
Somebody else had the name JethroTull.com, but I beat them off in the courts and got the name back.
Good for you.
We're officially JethroTull.com.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Ian, for joining us on Talking Animals, and good luck with the record and the new tour and all the animals.
Terrific.
Thank you so much.
Thank you to you, too.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
We want to thank again Ian Anderson for joining us today on Talking Animals. New album again is Rupees Dance, and the Jethro Tull website is, we clarified there at the end, chock full of wealth of information about animals and all kinds of other topics, including, of course, all things Jethro Tull and Ian Anderson related, is jethrotull.com. I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals on KUCI in Irvine, 88.9 FM. It's time now to proceed to something else that's fun. It's Name That Animal Tune, and of course, this is remarkably like any other version of Name That Tune you'd care to mention. Except that in this game, the tunes are always animal-related, usually just by virtue of one or more animals being part of the song title, but occasionally it's a little bit more indirect than that. Either way, like any version of this game, we can only provide a brief snippet of the tune in question for a number of reasons, not least that while the game hinges on a song being, of course, somewhat recognizable, we also don't want to stray too far for too long from the KUCI music policy. So with that preamble behind us, but also noting that there's always a prize, yes, I did say a prize, for the first caller who correctly identifies the song and artist. So now, even though I'm not in the studio at the time that you're hearing this at this moment, if you do call in with the correct answer, Serena Sharp or some other stellar KUCI type who's kind of looking after things for me in my absence, will take your name and info so that I can later score up with you on your fabulous prize. So we'll make good on that one way or the other, I promise. So again, you can call in if you do know the song and the artist. It's 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. So let's get started. It's It's Talking Animals on KUCI. All right, we can't go any further than that. I think we'll give it directly away. But anyways, if you do happen to know that, call in 949-824-5824-949-UCI-KUCI, and then we'll you'll get your information to someone, and I will indeed award you a prize, I swear. So anyway, it's really just about kind of... I think reaching the end of this week's edition of Talking Animals. So I want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or the UC Board of Regents. I want to thank our guest Ian Anderson for joining us today on Talking Animals. Again, the new record is Rupee's Dance. Depending on what part of the country you might be hearing this in, he's still doing dates, working his way towards Florida, I believe, and parts thereby, that towards the end of November, I think. But meanwhile, he's in New York and other places, so check that and everything else out at jethrotull.com. I also want to thank you all for listening, and next week I hope you'll join us on Talking Animals, when our guest will be Dan Matthews, the Vice President of Communications at PETA, and not coincidentally, the Chief Strategist behind all the high-profile campaigns that PETA does. He also, by the way, grew up in Orange County and sort of first became an animal activist as a teenager here, and even fondly remembers coming over to KUCI back in those days. So Dan Matthews will join us next week, November 10th, here on Talking Animals. And by the way, other great public affairs shows on KUCI include, just on Mondays alone, the Serena Sharp Show, which of course precedes Talking Animals. Then at 5 p.m. we offer Counterspin, the cool syndicated feature, followed at 5:30 by Planetary Radio with Matt Kaplan. And that's just Monday. There's great public affairs.